Institute. Dishing It Out with Gary O'Hanlon and Gareth Mullins, a Go Loud original podcast.
Your ultimate culinary companion.
Go Loud. Sounds better with us.
Okay, welcome to another episode of Dishing It Out with me, Gary O'Hanlon.
And me, Gareth Mullins.
And we've got a packed show for you today. We have the man himself, Al Porter, back out and about on the scene. Looking forward to seeing Al. He did a show at the K Club, K Live, last year, and I bumped into him in the foyer of the hotel. It was probably then when I said, listen, get yourself on the podcast. And he goes, yeah, wouldn't mind it. But he reached out, thank God, and we're back now with season 5. We're a couple of episodes in, so we got him in for today. I'm looking forward to seeing him. Back when he was kind of in the media, TV, radio, I sort of found myself doing a few 6 o'clock shows with him back in the early days, you know what I mean? So I kind of got to know him a wee bit. We will have our cookbook corner.
Wear a suit.
Skinny Conor McGregor. And Cookbook Corner, that sort of started. We kicked that off with you, I think, in the last episode. So
as usual, I have to be the one that gets things going.
You went first. Oh, I'm amazing, Gareth Mullins. And our culinary conundrums, thank God I'm here with a bit of knowledge to help everybody out there. And
not to a flyer tip.
Let's go.
Don't go anywhere.
It's spicy.
Okay, so up now is the cookbook corner, and I done the first one. So, Gary, what have you got?
Yeah, you did the first one. You didn't even know the name of the book. It means so much to me. It means so much.
Just so you know, everybody has his phone in his hand here, and he's looking up
behind the scenes.
Come on, there. Come
I'm
on.
Looking for it. It's actually called the Food Lover's Guide, but there's a new there's a new version now though. So if you're going to get it, it's almost like a dictionary. It's almost like a Bible, right? So it's not a cookbook in the sense it's an information overload. If you've never had you've never had this book, get it, right? The first one I have is the Food Lover's Companion. It's a white book. It's as thick as a good Collins dictionary. And you could just say Julienne, open it up on Julienne. Then you could say Katsu, open it up. Now, the new Food Lover's Guide is bringing in ethnicity. It's bringing in the way of the world now where people are eating all. The first one and the original one is probably a bit more repertoire de la cuisine type thing, like where it's that.
I have that one.
Escoffier job and all the stuff that we know and all the terminologies that we know. Whereas the new Food Lover's Guide will have all of that, but it will now also have everyday stuff to be a lot more in there on spices, on techniques. It is. When I was really a really young cook, and even now still, I mean, I'm 47 now, but I remember like when I was really young, I was probably too young to be a head chef at one stage back when I was 19 or 20. And like, you know, somebody asked me something and I used to keep it in my change bag. I hear a word and say, but I'd run down, I'd open it because I didn't want to look silly. Like, and I'd read it. There was no internet then at that stage or no Googling, but you would go and I would read it. I would read it 2 or 3 times and come back up and speak like with authority on it. And it was my savior. Like, I loved it. It was just brilliant. And I think it's something for serious cooks or curious cooks out there. It's a must have. It's amazing.
It's probably something people might know about our industry, but there's a lot of French terminology used in everyday kitchen talk. So there's like a lot of words that are used. And when you come in, especially if you didn't do any French in school or anything, when you first walk into a professional kitchen, you hear all these words that are French words, but they're used in English talk or whatever.
Mise en place,
yeah, all that.
Brunois,
all of that, right? Julienne.
And mayonnaise.
Yeah, well, exactly, right?
Oh, I was only joking. What about it?
But all these words, right, that are there, and you're just kind of going, what is your man talking about?
Yeah.
Mise en place. And you're like, all he's talking about is all the food that's on the bench. And then when the penny drops, then you go, oh, okay. And having the repertoire is another book. It's a smaller book that you can read. You wouldn't put it in your pocket, but it's only a small little A5 book. That one has all the French terminology and the French mother sauces and the mother stocks. And but that one you're talking about, I think I have that book, but I'm going to get the newer version of it.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It sounds classic.
Yeah.
There you go. I learned something today on the cookbook corner.
There you go.
Magnifique.
There you go. Cool.
Okay, so it is time to introduce our guest this week. Good old pal of mine and the one and only prick to ever bring a sandwich in his suit on TV while I was a designated chef in the program. It was a 6 o'clock show, could have been late lunch live. It was one of the early incarnations, and right after plating up a masterpiece, let's just call it, Al dips his hand into his suit pocket, pulls out a sandwich and basically smiles in my face and says, this is fucking better. Do you know what I mean? Al Porter, great to have you here, brother.
Well, as always, I like to begin with an apology. That seems to be a trend in my life when I meet people I met years ago. But oh my God, I can't believe that, Gary.
Yeah.
How are you, Gareth? Well, thanks for having me on the show. But God, looking back at that, I can't remember whether I sincerely was worried. I think there was a mix.
Well, you did say that. You says your mommy, you were living at home at the time.
Yeah.
Your mommy did all the cooking for you. You were picky as so-and-so eater, you said, and you just were like going, right, I'm going to be hungry, I'm going to be starving, there's no way I'm eating some fancy shite from this boy. And then
you
pulled
it for the crack.
Oh yeah,
I probably did.
You pulled it out
as well.
And to be honest with you, I thought it was
succeeded.
I thought it was
many years later.
I remember. I love how you say,
I've clearly got over it.
I love how you say you were living with your ma at the time, as if I wasn't living with my ma last year. I have moved out eventually.
Well, I always remember that night when you were on the couch. It was probably Martin that was interviewing you at the time or whatever, like, but I mean, your mammy and daddy, they sounded like the coolest people on earth anyway, so it was absolutely no surprise to hear that you were still camped in there last year. They really, really, I mean, I've never met your parents, but the way you spoke about your man in particular, I always think, like, to see the real true character of somebody is how they chat about their mammy, and you really spoke so highly about
that's
her.
That's the kind of Donegal, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's like
a proper man chats right about his mammy.
That's like Daniel O'Donnell, and you know, they have a good respect for the mammy and Donegal.
You have no idea.
All the years I know, and every time you refer to your ma as your mammy, deep down, I smile and go, I'm kind of like calling his mother his mammy.
Sure, she is me mammy.
Yeah. But no, I mean, my parents are great. I mean, they gave me a great well of material. And even still, even into the new show
What do you mean? Because they were...
Well, because...
taking the piss?
No, it's the opposite. They're not funny.
Okay.
I think any desire to be funny has been a reaction and a rejection
of
my parents' sincerity. They're the most sincere.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You had to dig very deep to get a laugh.
My ma is the parish secretary. My dad was an army sergeant, a flight sergeant in the Air Corps. And they're two of the straightest laced people you could ever get. And sort of like, they're not pious at all, but it's pillar of the community stuff. You know, he was then the caretaker in the school, and they're in no way flashy, and they are just very down to earth, good, ordinary people, which as a child I was going, this is boring as fuck. And I wanted to kind of stir a bit of shit. Yeah. And, you know, to get a laugh out of my ma was often to kind of do something a little bit bold, like, you know, to kind of come home from mass and go, did you see what your one was wearing? And she's going, oh my God, I shouldn't laugh, you know, but I will. Or even my dad was very good in a sense of, you know, he knew from very early on that he had quite a camp, effeminate son. And even getting a rise out of him was, you know, you had to kind of go that little bit further. Yeah. You know what I mean? And now when I'm writing the new show, they just always, things they say inspire me to go, you know, it's like I'm the youngest. My sister is 7 years older than me.
Right.
And my brother is 5 years older than me. And then I was a surprise, right? And my ma says, you still are.
Yeah.
You're full of surprises. You know what I mean? And being the youngest, you get your parents at their oldest. So I'm kind of getting them at a funny time of life.
Will they go and see the show?
Oh, they'll go and they won't laugh. Like, they'll go and they'll be mortified. My friend Alan is a taxi driver. Alan says, I was watching your parents. I did Vicar Street last year.
Yeah.
Right. He goes, they were proud. But to say they found it funny would be a lie. She said, your ma had her watched it through her fingers, you know, and your dad looked around to see was everybody else laughing. Now, if it's a joke about him, like he's a divil for, sometimes I'll write a line. You know, comedy is the truth with a bit of exaggeration or embellishment. Sometimes I'll write a line and he didn't say it.
Yeah, right.
But I'll say he said it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, I go, my dad said to me,
he's down there,
you
know,
there's quite a naughty joke that I did years ago on Live at the Apollo, either that or Michael McIntyre. So it was on BBC. Ooh. And I did this line, which my dad never said, but it was dirty, you know, but it was about, that's my son. He goes around, let's just say, giving fellas, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And BJ's, let's say. And he goes, he doesn't get that from me. And he certainly doesn't get it from his mother. Right. And I wrote this line, right? And this is the one that people quote to me. And my dad lived off the back of that for 3 years in Crow's Pub in Tallaght. Well, you heard what I said to Alan. It made it to the BBC. I go, you never said that in your life. So he enjoys that. Yeah. So my mom is that mixture of mortification, you know. But you're right that I have always spoken very fondly. Whenever I did the Late Late Show, I always had them in the audience.
Yeah.
Like they were at every single Late Late Show. Every Brendan O'Connor show, when I do Vicar Street, they go, you know.
But sure, if it's anything like our, like the Late Late Show has to be the pinnacle for an Irish mammy.
Yeah.
For sure. Like,
are you the only one that went into that side of the business?
I'm the only
what do your
one.
Siblings do?
My sister is a special needs assistant.
Right.
She's a very caring person. And then my brother is something to do with finance. Okay. And that's all I know.
He's a born bastard.
I always go, and my brother is a drug dealer.
Yeah, because
he lives in a nice house and he has a nice car and we've no idea what he does. But he was a real maths brain. He got an astrophysics degree. And my, you know, in a way, like, the ambition I had for comedy was to try and live up to the brother and sister, because when you walked into my hall in my semi-detached house in Springfield in Tala, right, there were three portraits, you know, the ones with the mahogany frame.
The graduation
in the hall.
Pictures.
Yeah. My brother with his
Elvis
degree.
Elvis, Hope. And yeah. What was the third one?
JFK.
JFK.
But it's my brother with his degree, right. My sister with her degree, right. And then my brother with his other degree.
Yeah.
And no picture of me. And people used to come in and go, oh, Marion, which one is Alan? Like, you know, and honestly, my man's going, oh, none of them are Alan. And I go, yeah, way to fucking take a dig at ego that there was nothing. And I joked with my dad this year. I said, you know, in my new show, I'm talking about the fact you never had the degree in me up there. And he goes, well, what were we supposed to put up? A picture of you giving a Renault back to RTE? There haven't been that many highlights to the career. I mean, they could have put up the picture of me when I got the IFTA. I did give them the picture of me. I got, do you ever hear that this, Gareth? I got an IFTA Rising Star Award, right? I was talking about this the other night. And they gave me the award in 2017. They said, the next 5 years of your life are going to be game changing.
Well, they weren't wrong.
They were right.
And they weren't right.
The runner up was Joanne McNally. I always say, if you're listening and you've ever lost or you feel like I never win at it, don't worry about it.
Yeah, yeah.
The runner up was Joanne McNally and Paul Mescal. And Thursday, I was doing comedy in the Putchin still.
Right.
In Rathfarnham, right? I was in the west wing of a caravan and I thought, I'd say Paul Mescal is raging.
Yeah.
He's not in the Putchin still of a Thursday.
I just saw him in the Coliseum with Denzel in Gladiators 2, Just chat about a meteoric rise that lad's had.
He's incredible.
And Joanne's done. What's funny, you know, the early days of Joanne's career as well, like, you know, they come on the 6 o'clock, you look, we've been doing it for years. I've actually stopped doing it. I was doing it that long and I pop in and out now. Gareth does it as well a good bit, but it's always so lovely to see the likes of you and Joanne, and there's been loads of other young Irish talent like in their chosen fields go through and do well. But for me, you know, you're just on and you're doing your own gig. Like, we're chefs. I'm in the K Club, as you know, and he's in the Marker. But, you always remember the ones that were nice and that were lovely. And to see you back and doing brilliant is great. And Joanne doing really well. She went
Joanne's
to help.
Incredible.
She went to help tidy up the kitchen one evening. I was like, Joanne, like, you're grand or whatever. And she just, like, you couldn't wish.
Well, there was no tidying after me.
Yeah. No,
I just had the lunchbox at time. But honestly, it's funny that you remind me of that, because I forgot all about that sandwich thing.
Yeah.
Well, I've been.
You're wearing your purple suit. You used to always wear coloured suits or all dressed up, funky, flashy. The suit's gone.
I was about 22, and when I wear a suit now, I've got a bit of grey.
You said you were.
I'm Simon Harris.
You said you were too skinny. You wore the suits because you'd fucking. You just filled you out a bit.
Yeah, well, I used to wear the thermals under the suit.
Yeah,
I even filled it out a bit better.
Oh, but what is that too? Is that because this is obviously we're two chefs? So what the food look like growing up? Was a hassle for you, or did you?
Oh, no,
it
was.
Did you hate it,
I mean, that this all ties together. I feel like I'm in a therapy session, you know?
You are, yeah.
But
get the invoice ready yet.
Yeah.
We'll have you boxed off in an hour.
Years, I did 6 years of therapy, which is very expensive.
Yeah,
I don't have a mortgage, but I have insight.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
It's a small consolation when you're rocking back and forth in your ma's attic on your health as your wealth. But anyway, the I mean, now if I wear the wrong suit, I look like Enoch Burke on Day Release or something like that. I mean, I've been.
You are the fucking head of him, actually, aren't you?
Listen, I have glasses. I have glasses. And I swear to God, this is not a joke. I have glasses. And I am a very unmaterialistic person. Contrary to maybe what the image was in the suits, I liked the suits. But things, I don't care about things. And so I just have this shitty school bag that has me a few bits for me gig in it.
Yeah.
My notebook, a few of my notes, you know.
Sandwich the sticks.
If I'm wearing, I was wearing a Mac. It was during winter. I was going down to the Olympia for the panto.
Yeah.
And they hadn't opened up the theatre yet. I arrive a bit early and I was going to be on in the pantomime. So I'm waiting outside the stage door with a Mac and my glasses on and my school bag, and I was the spit of Enoch. Like, I swear to God, even when I went in, the security guard was going, "Have you not got a school to be waiting outside?" The food and the suits, Gareth, kind of tie together. Because that all does trace all the way back to when I was a kid. When I was a kid, I refused to wear anything other than a communion suit. Now, my nanny was very good. She was from Ballyfermot. So, like, as you said, am I the only one that did show business? Yeah. So my parents are living in Tala a long time. Before that, they're Ballyfermot. And before that, my family would be the Flats. And I think my nana was York Street. And we were always
My parents are from Ballyfermot, and before that lived in town.
Exactly. So it's that kind of town, and then put out into the satellite towns that they built. And my nanny was very good. If he wants to wear a communion suit, he can wear the communion suit, and that's what I'll get him, right?
Yeah.
But I had about 6 or 7 different communion suits.
And where were you wearing them?
And like on the road playing football.
Jesus.
Like playing kick the can. Like my neighbour said to me, "We used to call you the suit." There goes the suit. There he is now. Out there. There's the suit.
Good on you, though. You did really want it.
Well, I wouldn't get out of it, right?
Right.
And I suppose I was wearing the suit, and then there was like a control thing when I wanted food. My ma said I would only eat fish fingers and waffles, right?
Mm.
Nothing else.
Solid.
Nothing else. And then I had to have my food on separate plates. So beans and peas or mashed potato or nothing green could touch off the potato, or I wouldn't eat it, or everything had to be separate. And I've always had that thing about the texture of food, and wouldn't touch fruit or vegetables until 2 years ago, maybe 3 years ago. Wouldn't go near fruit and veg. And I've been very odd about food. I mean, fussy doesn't cover the half of it.
Wow.
And wearing the suits and all that. And what's interesting is this has all been coming up because I was doing an assessment with a psychologist to see if I'm on the autism spectrum.
Yeah.
So how that works is what you do is you get curious about it as an adult, and you go, okay, I want to do the assessment. They'll do an initial consultation. That might be an hour or two chatting to you. Then they'll do much longer consultations.
Is that a question base led thing? Like, are they saying to you, what do you think about this? What do you think about that? Or are they getting you to do things?
No, well, mostly at this point in it now, where I've done 2 or 3, they're talking to you a lot about, tell me about your habits around food. Tell me about your habits around clothes. Like I always had to have the tag removed from my clothes. I didn't like the feeling of the tag. Same. I went up and down the stairs on my hands and knees until I was 13. I couldn't hold a knife and fork until I was 13. I couldn't butter bread until I was 14, right? Now, stay with me here. At the same time when I was 14, I spoke in the United Nations. I literally stood up and spoke to the Secretary General of the United Nations as a part of a young person's advocacy group for concern worldwide. So when I was 9, I had the reading age of a 15-year-old. So in one way, I was advanced. Yeah. And in other ways, I was behind. Couldn't borrow bread. Couldn't tie my shoelaces. Mm. And food was such a big one. Mm. So I've had these curiosities. You know, a friend of mine has, and it might resonate with somebody listening. A friend of mine has an autistic son, lovely fella, Cookie, who is a great name as well, but who is his real name, Jean-Luc, but who is quite severely autistic. Yeah. And my sister's a special needs assistant. She works with people. And my friend does say sometimes, you know, it kind of pisses me off. Like Elon Musk's autistic or Anthony Hopkins autistic or people using a label to maybe deflect. Like Musk was straight in with the autism thing when he did the Nazi salute or did he or did he not do the Nazi salute?
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm very conscious that for me, I'm really not in pursuit of a label.
Yeah.
But everything in my life in the last 7 years, lads, almost 8 years, has been about who am I?
Yeah.
Exploring myself and that curiosity over
for clarity. Or
for clarity, because I think that from 19 to 21, or maybe 19 to 23, when I last was in the offices that we're in here now, and I had a job here, it was a runaway train, and it was almost like living. A meditation teacher or someone like Dermot Whelan would say to you, living unconsciously. But what I mean by that is sleepwalking through your life, onto the next gig. Do you want to do radio? Yeah. Do you want to do TV? Yeah. Will you do Blind Date? Yeah. Do you want to do a line? Yeah. Do you want to have your 10th pint? Yeah. Do you want to, like, yes, 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 and no thought behind it and no living with intention. And in a way, putting on the suit and kind of feeling like, oh, I'm Al Porter, the fella from the Late Late Show, or the fella from the TV. And the more that I just did things without any conscious thought about it, the bigger the gap between who you actually are and who I actually am.
It's so easy done, though.
Yeah,
did you know at the time that you were?
No, I had no idea. I just thought, I knew before everything fell apart, I knew already that the train was coming off the tracks because people were concerned about me. People were going, you're coming into work hungover, or you're doing a gig and, you know, there's one thing having a pint before the gig. It's another thing to have two double vodkas and then go on the lash after the gig every time.
Right.
And there were people that were concerned, not just about the drink, though. They were concerned that, you know, I was telling them I wasn't enjoying it. So I was going.
And who, like managers or?
Yeah, yeah, or everybody. Or I kind of treated everybody like a bit of a counselor. Like Pamela in here, who was the producer on the radio show, she was also doubled up as my fucking therapist and my best mate. And even Adele, who ran the station back then, who ran Today FM, who's still a really good friend of mine. Like she would still say to me now, she'd go, Jesus, like, you know, everything happens for a reason, but the person I gave a job back then was so mixed up and so young and confused and lots of exuberance and ambition, but also lots of self-doubt and insecurity and confusion. And she goes, the person I'm meeting now, you'd be a great radio presenter. Too fucking bad. that boat sailed. But you know what I mean? And I suppose.
Yeah, but you say that boat sailed. Like, but I think that's not. Yeah, you never know. Like,
you
that's
never
not
know
fair
what
on
the
you
future
either.
Holds.
Yeah.
But I suppose that. So things were. It's a really complicated. You'd need hours to talk about it. But in a way, it was easier to be on autopilot and to just, you
but
know.
Then you're enjoying yourself as well. Like, you know
yeah.
what I mean? Like, it's.
Yeah.
But like, were you? Do you look back at that time of fond memories?
At times I was, but I think there's only so long you can enjoy that kind of
carnage.
Carnage of reckless, thoughtless living. And it's not that there's any malice in it, but it's that the whole thing is a bull in a china shop. So there's no malice in it. I only met someone the other day who I will save their identity, but they used to work in a big broadcaster. And they said to me, I remember you when you were 21 and you were on a show and there was a cameraman who was probably same age as you or maybe a year or two older. And you were going over in front of everybody, lifting up the t-shirt, going, look at his abs. Oh, Jesus, he's a riot. And he said, everybody was laughing and there was this exuberance there. But he said, I guess, and he was talking about himself. He says, I guess even I didn't stop to go, yeah, what does the cameraman think of that? Or, you know, even if he's laughing, is he kind of going, I don't fucking come to work for Porter to lift up my t-shirt, you know? Mm. And he said, but also he said, it wasn't, you could see there was no, and he made this great point, and I couldn't remember this. You could see there was no malice in you because he said, I remember later that day, you met the most powerful person you could have met, the person that was running the broadcaster. So top dog. And they said, I'd love to talk to you about doing a TV show. And you said, yeah, whatever about that. I've never had a hotel room before. Do you want to come upstairs with me? You're a good looking fella. And everybody laughed. But again, he said, I remember taking you aside going, A, he's already offered you a TV show, so you don't have to do anything with him in a hotel room. But he's going, B, what are you fucking doing? Yeah. But he said, I could see that it wasn't to do with whether or not you thought you were or weren't above somebody's station or below. That was in the one day in the space of 2 hours talking to the cameraman or then talking to the man who literally called every shot for the station. And there was equal disregard, equal recklessness. And that's the thing. It's like, where does the line blur between exuberance and naivety and like that thing of being shot out of a cannon, and one minute you're a studious A student in school in Tala who's never had a drink, and 2 years later you're a college dropout, one of the most famous gay people in the country. And I mean, my Snapchat, I could not open Snapchat without it blowing up with a million bleeding dick pics, you know? But I didn't have the sense to go, yeah, don't reply. You know, they're not on TV. Yeah, you are, you know? So I made a lot of mistakes, and I'm very, very conscious, as I said, that the last kind of 7-8 years of my life has been going, okay, this happened for a reason. You know, there's absolutely no denying that you let people down or upset people or people were uncomfortable around you. And you have to go, okay, they're right. What can I do about it? What can I change? And I call it accountability in a supportive environment, which is, how can I make living amends? I mean, it's one of the big things in AA. Sometimes direct amends aren't possible. Like sometimes it's going, you won't get the opportunity to have the conversation face to face with somebody. Now, sometimes I have, and there's a multitude of reactions from, I appreciate you saying that to me, to, sure, I don't give a fuck, you don't have to apologize to me, you know? But making living amends is going, every day, do I live my life in a way that is a response to saying, I'm not going to be that guy. I'm going to be somebody else. And so in order to do that, you have to get a lot of help. You have to get counseling. You have to do AA. You have to have support. And the more you go down that track, anybody who's ever done AA will tell you, or anybody who's ever done 6 years of working with a cognitive behavioral therapist will tell you, or trying to get themselves back on stage, that you become very curious about yourself. And so in the process of doing that and going, who am I when I'm not on stage?
Yeah.
Who am I when there's no cameras on? What do I want to do if it's not for applause? Like, what would bring me value or self-worth if it's not about getting a reaction? And when you start to discover that stuff about yourself and you're on that path of discovery, it can become kind of addictive. to find more and more about yourself. And that's why in the last year then, a woman had come up to me and said, oh, I heard you telling the stories, because I had funny stories about you and the food when you were a kid, or you and the communion suit. Maybe you're autistic. And it's just one other thing. It's one other thing that I'm going, yeah, I'm curious about that.
From our world and the people that listen to this, how is food then for you now? Because you've told us about your relationship with food, that growing up was a control thing. And I think when you first come in there, you told me that you started cooking a bit during COVID.
Yeah, I mean, that's food.
So is food now a joy? Is that what you found?
It has really improved.
Do you eat veg?
I don't believe you for a second.
He doesn't eat any veg.
Well, just about. So in too much, you know. In fairness, the psychologist said I am autistic. So just in case you're wondering, and did she tell you you're not autistic and fuck off? No, she said you are.
Yeah, right.
But,
right.
But no, it has really improved. So I met my fella, and he's from Donnybrook, and like he has like a really wide palate. And, like I'm with him 9 years, you know.
He's eating munch too and all, is he?
Like, oh, listen. Like I was saying,
full down boy.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, like his mother said to me, oh, if you're feeling hungry, there's two loose sausages in the fridge. And I remember thinking, you manky bitch, two loose sausages, like not even a string of sausages, just two independent sausages rolling around in the fridge juice. And I was thinking, no wonder they have money, you know. And they eat different things, like the way more experimental. I grew up on stew, and you'd have the stew for days, or you might have, you know, mince, and it was shepherd's pie one day, and the next day a bit of tomatoes was put on top of it, and suddenly it was with pasta, you know. And you know, and then the next day, like, it kept evolving. It was burgers.
A mince connoisseur myself.
And they would eat so different. Like his dad was saying to me, Al, have you ever tried coq au vin? You know, and I'm going, I have, but it was a people carrier. But that's a stupid joke. But there is, they do eat differently. Like I always say, I don't know if you agree with this, working class people, right? We eat the way you'd expect posh people to eat. And the reverse is true. So stay with me here, right? You, and when you're a kid, you would think people with money must eat loads because they have the money for it. They must eat loads of really lush stuff, right? But and poor people must eat small portions of horrible things. But the opposite is true. So working class people are down in the Red Cow trying to get gout every Sunday, going, I'll actually have the roast beef and the turkey and the spuds and the gravy. And then my boyfriend's family are like, oh, I'll just have a garden snail, please. Just a sliver of a duck pancreas, please. On it. Like I look at the plate sometimes in their house. I've never done Christmas in their house because I go, I'd be fucking starving. Like I look at the plate and I'm going, I'm sorry, what is that? That's like a Jew.
That's a good point.
A Jew. And a, like, rich people. And I mean, their parents aren't that rich, but you know what I mean? It's a different atmosphere. And my relationship, thanks to the boyfriend, in fairness, and his patience with me, he has introduced me to more and more food. So he started getting me having, say, fruit if I had it in a smoothie. So eventually, I would have a smoothie that would be spinach, kale, kiwi, avocado, berries, all thrown into the smoothie, a bit of carrot and ginger, all thrown into the smoothie. And my veg, I will eat in a sauce. Like I'll eat like a stir fry because the veg is all chopped up with the noodles and the and the meat. Or I'll eat it in a soup, or I'll eat it in a chili con carne. So I am getting there. And I will try things. I was away with his family. His dad was retiring, right? And we went away to the south of France. And they're all going, have you ever been to France, Al? And I'm going, no. We used to go to Santa Ponsa, thanks very much. And in fact, I never saw Santa Ponsa because I was put in child jail, which is the kids' club. And my man, dad went off and got locked and collected me at 7 p.m. so a drag queen with a parrot could entertain me. And then you went to bed. Like, that was my holidays. But they were going to Chateau, you know, and it was like, you know, what's Chateau Becheval and all this stuff. And because his dad worked in wine. So he was retiring, and a lot of these people at the chateaus were saying goodbye and all that, you know. And we went to one and we had dinner with this family who are obviously stinking, right? And this thing came out and my fella just went, eat it. And I'm going, I can't fucking eat it. And it's this little, like, I don't know how you describe it, pink, right? Small, meaty, kind of leathery, but kind of like very bumpy. So a bit like... Do you ever,
Where is he going with this?
No, but like, do you ever have like a hemorrhoid or anything? You know, I'm just saying, like, it was this kind of thing. And I, but he said, no, it's bacon. And I ate it. But anyway, it turned out it was a thing called gizzards.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus. That
lovely.
Was, No.
A duck or two.
I ate it. Yeah. Like, what is a gizzard? I ate it when it was on the, but then. When I heard it was a gizzard, I was calling it giblets for ages. But when I heard it was a gizzard, I felt sick. But what is that? Is that like a stomach of a bird?
No, I think it's neck. It's a gland from the neck.
Yeah, it's up around the neck.
Jesus, that.
They were, you realised they were taking the piss out of you. Like, you're not supposed to eat it.
Yeah.
What? Yeah.
Are you not
that was
to
a total blame stitch up.
I've never.
What do you mean?
I've only messed with it. Oh, I just wanted to see your reaction.
It'd be very similar to liver, actually, in texture.
But I've become.
Yeah, it's a pure delicacy.
You would have eaten liver growing up. I bet.
Well, liver pate. My dad, liver pate.
Oh, yeah.
See, I think I got a fright because we had ducks out in the garden and we thought they were pets. And then one day my dad gave us dinner and said, did you like our chicken?
Right.
And I said, yeah. And he goes, well, it wasn't chicken. It was your ducks.
It was Bertie.
And we were crying like 7 years old. And my ma was going, Mick, you shouldn't have said that to him. He goes, well, how's he going to learn?
Yeah.
How's he going to learn? Where does he think food came from? You know? So he's real old school like that. And actually, Bovril was one. We used to be given Bovril and bread. Bovril. I mean, I'm making myself sound like I'm putting on the poor mouth. Like, you know, do you remember Angela's Ashes and your man was always accusing him of saying, you made yourself sound poor. You didn't grow up like that. But that was the way it was. I tell you this. Now my attitude around food has become very positive since COVID, as you say.
Mm-hmm.
Because in COVID, there was nothing to do and all the time to do it. And I just started cooking and I'd never cooked in my life. I'd heated up a waffle. I'd heat up a fish finger. But suddenly I was like, no, I'm going to do it. Like I got interested in my ma's recipe books and my partner's ma's recipe books, handwritten. And actually the kind of romance of that, the romance around food became, I'd never been a foodie. I'd never thought, I want to go to a Michelin star restaurant. Like that never attracted me. You know, go to a Michelin star restaurant. But actually the romance around going in the days before the internet.
Yeah, yeah.
This woman found and she had cuttings from newspapers from the 50s and 60s. Cool. And she had handwritten things because if somebody cooked you something and you liked it, you can't just Google.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Give me the recipe,
write it down,
hairy yeah. bikers. You know, yeah, you yeah. actually have to write it down. And there's these, and you could tell which ones she'd made more than others because they had the thumbprints and
yeah, right.
they were, and it's actually magic. And I was making ones from that, like chicken and tarragon or sweet potato soups that had sweet potato and red peppers and these autumnal kind of soups and the smells. And I got very good at chimichurri. I'm making my own, this Argentinian thing.
Recipe books are an unbelievable connection with the past.
Yeah.
Like, sure, do you remember, what do you call it, the woman that was in Mia?
Maya Dunphy, yeah.
Maya Dunphy was in, and like, sadly, her mommy passed quite surprisingly only a few years ago, but she got really emotional in here. Like, and,
yeah, she brought in a recipe
book.
Christmas, and it was a...
Her mommy's.
Yeah, it was clippings of a magazine. But the same thing, it's that whole idea of someone... that you cooked for and they loved it and you want to remember how to do it because you care about them.
And I'd never had that connection. To me, food had been a barrier. Yeah. Food had been something to overcome. Food was my great aunt who was an ex-nun going, you will eat a banana and shoving it into my face, you know.
It's funny when you...
How did you become gay? But, you know, like food was this barrier of people going, you have to eat it because you're in their house or it's rude or, you know, it was negative, negative, negative. Yeah. But in COVID, it took on this positive thing. Of my boyfriend's parents, I was kind of in his house a lot during COVID. And I remember my ma ringing me going, oh, I'm watching the news. If you don't come home, you could end up stuck in Donnybrook. And I'm going, you're breaking up there, man.
Yeah.
Because, not because it was Donnybrook, yeah, because their house was fucking massive.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
so I knew if I stayed there, we wouldn't really have to see the parents. You know, yeah, it could be shit in the night.
Yeah.
And so, but over COVID, suddenly between baking the bread or making the pesto, yeah, with the parmesan and the fresh basil and the and getting into it and experimenting and going, I put in too much vinegar in that, yeah, chimichurri there, or yeah, I did. And actually, the social aspect of his parents were in their 70s, right? And in fairness, we weren't paying rent. I wasn't working. He wasn't working. So to actually, the social aspect of putting down the food at night as a thank you,
yeah,
for letting us stay,
yeah,
there.
Yeah, it was lovely.
And seeing people taste it and enjoy it. And suddenly I went, I actually get it now.
Yeah.
And my dad was always passionate about food. And my dad, they call him half a cook. In half a chef in the GAA club. They go, there's half a chef now, because he was always coming in with the big stainless steel, what you call that, the big cauldron, like,
yeah, right,
you know, full of whatever, it's coddle or whatever. Mm. And he'd be making things. And at Christmas, my dad makes food for the elderly or, yeah, people who don't have anything at Christmas. And he'd bring it round to the gaff just off his own back.
Mm.
And I was like, I get it now. My, yeah, dad isn't mad about food, because he loves to cook, but he wouldn't go to a fancy restaurant. But he's not a gastrophile, but he is into the act of giving you,
yeah,
the food and the generosity.
Well, it's a lovely thing to do for someone, you know what I mean? And even then, going way back to the first night I would have met you on the show, like, I still vividly remember when you chatting about your mommy, and I was like going, God, geez, his house just was like my house when you were chatting about the mince or chatting, yeah, about stews. Or it was exactly the same that was going on in Tala that was going on in Donegal.
Yeah.
And that really resonated with me. Like, so when you,
yeah,
chat.
And now I'm working with my ma. My ma's going, how do you make your shepherd's pie?
Yeah.
So I make this shepherd's pie. Like, the one that we grew up with was mince.
And then you go, Alexa, give me the recipe.
But it was mince and the OXO cube. And the mashed potato, and then the bird's eye peas, and that was it.
Yeah, yeah.
But then I started experimenting with, well, what if the potato was sweet potato and mashed potato? And what if there was a bit of cheese on top?
Yeah.
And what if there was a bit of red wine in the thing? And what if there was a little bit of garlic? And what if you, when you were doing the carrots, you did them in butter first? And now my ma's,
so you're
going,
really after getting into it.
Oh, and now my ma's going, how do I do your shepherd's pie? And my dad's going, I like shepherd's pie the way we always had it.
Yeah, yeah.
With the OXO cube. I don't need red wine in the shepherd's pie, which is funny. He's traditional, you know?
Yeah.
But I actually, as I'm speaking about it, like, it really has become, it was important for me. It was important for me that, that not only did I sort of like realize who was I without the drink, or who was I without the stage, but, or who was I out of the suit, you know? Who's Alan Kavanagh underneath, yeah, Al Porter?
Mm.
But it was important that if I found that there was nothing there, that I needed to start going, well, what am I interested in?
Yeah.
And food became a big one of them. Like, I, wow, love now to have, I would be the one of my friends that has people around and goes, I made the bread, I made the, you know, yeah, I made the lasagna, I made the, and I like doing food for the social, mm, aspect. And I'm the one in my relationship that cooks.
Mm.
Mike doesn't cook. He that's not me taking credit. Mike does so many other things with, yeah, the, right, money and with the everything, but he doesn't fucking cook.
Yeah, dead.
And I would cook, and that's my thing now. And it's like, even I was mentioned to you off air that I'm going back to study theology, and I was always really interested in theology. And it's funny, in the Bible, there's loads of food.
Yeah.
There's loads to do with food in the Bible. And I'm not studying theology because I'm a Bible beater or anything like that. I'm not going, yeah, down. I won't even say his name, but there's a very famous comedian who suddenly became a guru the minute, mm, that everybody went, you're,
yeah,
a wanker.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that's not what I'm trying to do. There's no guru here.
Yeah.
But I'm interested in it. Maybe because my ma was the parish secretary. Maybe because I always wanted to be a priest. But in the Bible, the first miracle Jesus does, and I can be corrected on this, maybe I'm wrong, I'm pretty sure the first miracle in the Bible is water into wine. That's the first miracle Jesus.
And the best one.
Still
the
best. Still the best one. You took the words out of me, mate.
Yeah. Isn't it funny that it's the most joyous?
And he peaked very fast.
Yeah. I'm speaking figuratively here. And I wouldn't be the only comedian that was ever interested in theology. I think Tommy has a great interest in it as well. And I'm speaking figuratively. I'm not talking about literal Bible Belt America, you know, isn't it amazing that Jesus turned the water into wine? But even figuratively, lads, as a piece of poetry or a piece of prose, isn't it interesting that whoever was writing those stories wanted us to know that the first thing, the first miracle was something as joyous as going, I want these people at this wedding to have a fucking drink.
Yeah.
And then what's one of the other biggest ones? I want these people to have the loaves and the fishes. I want these people to be able to break bread together. And the biggest one, the Last Supper, all about breaking bread together, sharing wine. It's all tied to that idea of food as coming together, food as communion, food as it's a ritual. It's the Christmas dinner.
Oh, for
it's
sure.
a ritual.
And you're preaching to the converted here.
Yeah, I mean,
we build careers.
We're wearing the robes already.
And listen, I like all the other stuff, and I like the Heston Blumenthal. I see it on the TV, and you know, they pull open the thing and it's on fire, and then there's dry ice and there's fucking LED lights underneath the chicken.
And then that'll be £280.
I mean, I remember once when I was doing well, right? I was always making a show of myself, you know, because I wasn't from that world. So I remember like going out when I went to meet Roger Moore's wife, right? So I'm going to meet Roger Moore after his show, but first we're having dinner, me and my boyfriend, with Lady Moore, Roger Moore's wife, yeah?
Right.
And she orders pizza, but I'm going, what am I meant to do? Like, how are you meant to eat pizza dignified? And I'd been told, call her Lady Moore.
Yeah.
So like, don't be calling her Elizabeth or whatever we're going to call her Lady Moore. And like, so I just started eating the pizza with a knife and fork, and I'm eating it for a while with the knife and fork, and then she picks it up and
holds
it
into it.
And I was going, oh my God, I must look like an idiot, you know? And then I remember, I'll never forget, she introduces me to her son, who's like a 60-year-old man. I mean, this woman's about 85. Yeah. So this 60-year-old man is like, oh, I believe you had dinner with mommy. And I'm going, yeah. And then what are you going to say? Like, so I just go, oh yeah, you look very like Roger.
Yeah.
I said, there'll be no denying you. You look very like your father, right? And she went, oh no, no. His father is the one before Roger. And I went,
you're having a nightmare.
Oh yeah. Sean Connery, is it? Just for the laugh.
Yeah. I hope that gave her a giggle.
Oh, she liked that.
Yeah,
she liked that.
That's a cracker.
I remember, I remember being in a restaurant in London.
That's your best joke, yet.
Oh, stop. I didn't know I was here to tell jokes. Sorry, I was very serious. People be listening to it going, there's actually something wrong with your man, Al Porter. How's Al Porter? He's an autistic priest or something. I don't know. He's an autistic priest.
He makes a good shepherd's pie.
But I remember being in a restaurant in London with a BBC fella, and I didn't know that there were different kinds of salt. Right. And, you know, I just thought all salt is Saxa salt.
Yeah.
You know, just at that stage in my life, I probably thought it came from the sea of Saxa. I don't know. Yeah. But anyway, there's Himalayan pink, as you know, and there's kosher, and there's black sesame and all this. So this fella comes over and very, very highfalutin restaurant. Like Stephen Fry was in the corner, could see him out of the corner of my eye. Yeah. Some fella playing the piano, and I go, it's nice that there's a fella playing the piano. And the fella went, there's not a fella playing the piano. Jules Holland is playing the piano.
Stop.
As he was just playing it, like he was having dinner, and then he went, oh, I'll give it a tinkle. So this slate, you know, like a black slate, comes over with four lines on it, right? Four, and I thought, oh, I meant to sniff this. Well, what would you think? I'm after coming from Tala, and your man just put it in front of me, and I went, and up it goes like a Hoover, Dyson Hoover, up the nostril, and they're all looking at me horrified, and I knew immediately, because the burn, lads, the stinging and the burn,
out of your head.
And the feel, and I'm going, and they went, that's salt.
Yeah.
And I went, oh no, I know, yeah.
Tell me you took a soap out of finger about washing your hands right after that.
I just said to them, oh no, that's an Irish thing. You know, like salt over the shoulder, salt up the nostril. It's a good, I mean, how fucking embarrassing. And I know you have to go now in a second, but you can cut this in anywhere. I have had similar experiences. My boyfriend's family, in my house, pasta was always pasta. Like, yeah, that was, yeah, all it was like, it didn't matter if it was a tube or it was a, right, you know?
Yeah.
I'm sitting in his house one time with the fella in the posh family, right? I like tagliatelle, you know? And I'm going, what? They go, I like tortelloni. And they say, oh, I like rigatoni. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then it came to me, what do you like, Al? And I was going, oh, shit, you know? Like, I don't know anything about football.
Yeah.
And it got to me, and I genuinely said, I like trapattoni. I thought we were talking about footballers. I'd like cantapomi, anything. Yeah, I was, yeah, going, this is, but I mean, yeah, mad. I tell
you what, Al, you seem very happy.
I am happy.
Yeah. Good. It's great to see you.
Tell you,
bubbly and happy.
I appreciate that. And you know what, Gary? Like, people like you, people like Gareth, you know, you're not trying, if I can assume your, yeah, intention, you're not trying to talk to me to absolve me of any wrongdoing from when I was younger. Yeah. You know, I think that's a mistake some people make sometimes. At the end of the day, you know I fucked up. You know I fucked up. Yeah. I know I fucked up. I am in 7 years down the line of trying to do everything I can to make sure I'm not that guy, yeah, and to understand that and to be better. But I am really grateful to people like you. And there's people like that in the comedy world, whether it was John Bishop from Liverpool, yeah, agreeing to do a gig with me, or Dylan Moran doing a gig with me, or the audience, people coming to see me in Vicar Street, Cork Opera House, tickets on sale now on
Alporta.ie.
But actually, it's that support where you're, yeah, not saying, I think you never did anything wrong in your life. I assume you're saying, I know you know that, and I want to see the good coming out of you.
Yeah.
And I really appreciate that.
Who hasn't made fucking mistakes? Do you know what I mean? Like,
you know, I really appreciate, yeah, it.
I'm really happy for you, man. It's great to see you.
And when is the next gig?
The shows start again in, I'm always gigging. I'm always doing the Putchin still, yeah, or whatever, yeah, other carvery I'm gigging in, or 100-seater.
You're in there, Rob. Yeah, yeah.
So you go around the country doing. But the big gigs, once a year I do a big tour. And there's still people that didn't even realise I did it last year. Mm. But I did 30,000 people last year, well, with my show, Al Porter Now. And I suppose if last year's show was therapy, this year's show is a party. This, yeah, year's one is more crack, more fun. And it's called Algorithm. And it starts in Cork Opera House. It starts in the Moat Theatre, actually. They're both sold out. Two nights in the Moat Theatre in Kildare. And then Cork Opera House. And it goes around the country until, brilliant, next year. But if you go on my website, people will find the gig.
The false gig.
And it's 60 minutes of stand-up comedy. And if I can say something before...
Well, you are in tip-top form, so, well, listen, get out and buy the ticket.
We've one last question.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Ask you. So, yeah, we ask everybody that comes on their death row meal. So if the last thing you're ever going to eat...
And it can't be a plate of trapattoni.
No, exactly. What is it? What does it look like? And we've had answers from... all sorts of things. But what thing really?
So this is the last thing you're going to
eat. We've had everything from bangers and mash to 9-course tasting dinners. Yeah.
Exactly. So one thing that you, every time you eat, or the last time you're going to eat, you go, do you know what?
I know the answer to that. Right. Since people have asked me, you know, that's a nice dinner party.
Yeah,
question,
yeah, exactly.
For the last 10 years.
Yeah.
It's a 3-in-1.
Yes.
From North Park.
Nice.
It has to be from North Park. Now, other chippers, there are other chippers available. Yeah, there are other Chinese available. But from North Park in Springfield, which just across the road from my house, we live off Fortunestown Lane, which is an ironically named street. And just across there is North Park. Gemma, who works in there, is a star. Love you, Gemma. And they do the 3-in-1, but when I was, and the 4 chicken balls. But when I was a kid, you never called that 3-in-1. That was called an A special.
Right.
And I tell you this, and I don't know whether you'll find this nice or not, and maybe I'm getting sentimental. I suppose this is what I was going to say to you, is if anybody's listening going, what's going on with that fella at all? Is he trying to be funny or not funny? Or I don't know. I guess I'm not trying to be acting anymore.
Yeah.
I don't even know if I'm going to do another stand-up tour after this one. And they're going well. Yeah. I mean, that's not me going, it's not selling, so I'm going to fuck off. Yeah. It is selling. The Vicar Streets are almost sold out, and that's 4,000 tickets and all that. I'm doing the Panto in the Olympia. But I just don't know what way life is going. And I just, between COVID and the 6 years of getting sober and all that, I just spent so much time in my 20s not really living that now I'm going back to college. I'm going traveling. I'm enjoying being a boyfriend. I'm enjoying writing. And I'm writing a new play that's coming to a big theatre in Dublin. I never thought I'd be a playwright. Mm-hmm. And all I'm trying to do is just live. Be me, like, live. Just be me and live. So I don't even know if there's going to be more stand-up. So come see me while you can.
Yeah.
But but just to be sentimental for a second, the 3-in-1, the A special, as we called it, when I was younger, my dad was just this man in a uniform. Like, he wasn't home very often. And he was this man in the uniform with the cap and all that and the flight sergeant, you know, and his slicked back hair. He was like, my dad sort of looks like Humphrey Bogart. You know, he's a very classic looking fella with the hair parted and slicked. And sometimes you wouldn't see him that often. And he might have been away, you know, in Lebanon or Congo or whatever. And my dad would wake me up sometimes in the middle of the night at 2 a.m. and he'd be back from somewhere and he'd wake you up and shake it in the bed and go, come downstairs, you know. And he might have a teddy for you or something like that that he brought back, but he always had an A special. And then he would show me, and as a kid, I loved this. He says, listen, this is a little trick. And you open the batter of the chicken ball and you take the chicken out and then you get the rice and the curry sauce and you put it inside and you make the little package and you eat it. And I will never forget just sitting up with my dad at 3 a.m. watching whatever was on telly, like an Arnold Schwarzenegger or Jean-Claude Van Damme, eating me little parcels of chicken ball and curry. And, you know, that is a memory that I will treasure forever. And if I was on death row, that's the thing. It's not about, I want to have the nicest fillet steak. I think your last meal, you want a food that reminds you of the great times.
You nailed it. You absolutely nailed it.
Wow.
This fella now will be in tears now driving back up the M50 on his way home. That. We love it.
The old boy used to go for a pint on a Wednesday night, a midweek sports special be on. And even still to this day, I can't stay up late. I'd be falling asleep or whatever. But the old boy used to wake us up for midweek sports special, and he would always be home before 12. Generally, if he went out for a pint, it was only, never ever saw them tipsy growing up. Always vividly remember that. And he would get we used to call it a single fish and sleeves. Yeah. So there was different names on gear in our local cafe as well. And he would just give you, cut off a big chunk, tear off the brown paper bag, put a wee bit of salt on it, give you a handful of chips, and Pierce, my older brother, may be watching midweek sports special, and we'd all be sharing a fish and chips. And just like that, I can absolutely transport myself back.
I know, there was something
magic, man.
Yeah.
Just magic.
There's just something
about it.
He wanted
to see you, and you were like, deadly, I'm getting an A special.
But this is it. This is it. I mean, it's so special. I'm really, really blessed.
Yeah.
And thanks for talking to me.
Thanks,
and
million.
Great Love to it. Have you in, brother.
Whoever listens to this show, thanks for listening.
That's us. Right, thanks, nice Al.
Well, we knew that was going to be a tumper of an interview, but Jesus, man, he really gave us...
I don't think we, which was new for me anyway, and you, we didn't say an awful lot.
Like, well,
we
just, definitely new
we just,
for you.
We just let him off. We let him off the leash there.
But you know, it was admirable how honest he was and how open he was.
Yeah.
You know, he's obviously been through some...
He's matured an awful lot.
Has, and also, I think it's... I like to see when someone has learnt by something.
Yeah.
Definitely, you know, he's definitely a bloke that's...
Like, that would have a toll on anybody, you know what I mean? I mean, he was on the borderline immature side, you know. I mean, I met him out a few nights. Tough to hear. Sorry, Al, if you're listening. Like, but Jesus Christ, you were a dose when you were drinking, you know. But
the other bit I love as well is when people, and loads of people say, oh no, I'm not really into food that much. And then once he got going, like, he's a foodie.
I remember he done that day to me, man, on Late Lunch Live or 6 o'clock show. It's called the 6 o'clock show now. It had two or three names, as we said, but pulls a sandwich out of his inside pocket and he's like going, I love to fucking burst you. Do you know what I mean?
When he was talking there about how food is playing such a big part in his life now.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, we speak about it here week in, week out, that, you know, it's just something that's so important to so many people.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of people start off by saying, oh, I'm not that much into food, or I'm not really into it. And then once you scrape the surface a little bit, you find then they're into it just as much as we are.
Yeah.
Or like, maybe not to the same degree, but.
For sure. Yeah. No, it was good to see him. He's in tip-top form. And look,
he's forgetting how tall he is, man.
Yeah.
He's a big unit, isn't he?
Yeah, especially
stuff. Well, I don't know if he's a big unit.
I mean, know, he's tall. Like,
tall. Yeah. He's 6 foot odd.
He's like a stick of celery.
I'm glad he's gone here. If you like Bladen, he would be like Conor McGregor trying to sort you out with all the insults. Anyway, go crack.
Good man, Al. We're
into our culinary conundrums. Ed Chef, what have we got?
Here we go. Hi, Gary and Gareth. Oh, I'm straight in with this. Commiserations to Gary from a Kerry fan, firstly. I'll leave that little dramatic pause.
All Ireland.
Oh, yeah.
Yous will be back once David Clifford retires. Very good. Now, I've tried roasting a chicken loads of times. Oh, we've had this a few times, actually, so good to get a definitive answer again. But I can never get the skin crispy and keep the meat juicy. What's the secret? Should I be brining or using butter or what?
Yeah, definitely brining. You got to brine it, right? There's two ways you can brine it. Buttermilk brine for a whole chicken is really, really good. And you just literally submerge it in buttermilk. Then you rinse it off the next day, pat it dry, rub it with oil, rub it with Maldon flaky rock salt, sit it on a trivet of vegetables, which just means carrot, onion, celery, keep it off the base, start it at 220 degrees. So a whole chicken, legs, thighs, the whole nine yards on, it's probably going to roast at like 180 for about an hour and 20 minutes. Everybody's oven's a wee bit different, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But if you start it high, bring it down and finish high. That'll really help with the crispiness. But also have some water in the tray, which will become your gravy. But for the last 20 minutes at the 220, you're gonna baste it every 5 minutes,
really?
For 20. And that's what you should do with the turkey as well. Second way then to brine is just making a brine solution, which is a sugar and salt solution. Look up, Google any kind of a recipe, right? But you'll be probably thrown by the amount of salt and the amount of sugar. Then there's aromatics like cinnamon, star anise, peppercorns, bay leaves, things like that that's in it.
Lemon.
You're basically going to bring it to the boil, turn it off, add some ice to it, or just let it go completely ice cold. And then you'll sit the chicken into it, submerge it for 24 hours. And this really, really is a brilliant way. The meat takes on that salty brine. You're incorporating flavor, but it also stays in there, keeps the moisture in there. But then it's essential that you start 220 for 20 minutes, bring it down to like 160 or 170. Once put in your internal thermometer, most people have one, or most new ovens will have one as well. And actually, when it's around 70 degrees, crank it up to 220 again. Now baste it, ladle the juices over the top of it until you hit an internal temperature. Like, you'll know, we would know it by eye and by touch, but to do it properly, 75 degrees, bang, she's ready, out. But finish on a high temperature and you'll be good to go.
There you go. Ethan Tralee, great question.
One little thing to add to that, it's the quality of the chicken probably.
Yeah.
A lot of the cheaper chickens, they inject them with water.
Oh, yeah, they're full of water.
Oh, is that it?
Yeah, look, if you just, you probably find if you spent an extra 4 or 5 quid on the chicken, you'll...
Like, you should be spending about 18, 19 euro on a full chicken. If it's cheaper than that, it's shite.
There you go, Ethan Tralee. And we're moving now to Lucan. Straight in. All right, lads, what's the actual difference between baking soda and baking powder? And can you swap them? I always panic mid-recipe.
That's the same.
Is it?
Yeah. Baking soda and baking... What? No, no. Baking soda is... Sorry, sometimes they call...
Bicarbonate of soda.
Yeah, sorry. That's what I... Bread soda and baking soda is the same.
Yeah.
And then baking powder is different. So baking powder has another rising agent in it as well. And then some recipes will call for both. The thing that always confuses me is that American recipes call it baking soda. Or no, American recipes call it bread soda.
Yeah.
And we call it baking soda.
Okay. Yeah.
They're the same thing.
They're the same thing. Exactly. That's what... And then, but baking powder is totally different. So self-raising flour, for example, already has baking powder in it.
Oh.
So when you see a recipe when it calls for self-raising flour and you don't have any, just look up on the internet 100 grams of flour, how much bake or baking powder will I put into it? And it tells.
And that makes it self-raising.
Then it's self-raising flour.
Oh my God.
So yeah, so a lot of people, like I don't buy self-raising flour at home because I just, if a recipe calls for it and there's a kilo of self-raising flour, it's normally a tablespoon and a half will get you into self-raising flour.
Did not know that.
So there you go. Brilliant. And then like bread soda, I think what we commonly see it in is our wonderful traditional Irish soda bread.
Yeah, brilliant. Yeah. Good man, Darren Luke, and now we're going
man,
to
Castle. Man, Darren, you almost confused me there. Pulled myself back out of the weeds there.
Sinead in Castle Bar. I might meet her now. This time. Hey, fellas, love the pod. Quick one. Oh, yeah, we're back to air fryer. Are air fryers actually worth it or just another trend? I'm tempted, but don't
I'm
want...
I'm taking this one.
Don't
I'll
want more counter clutter. This is an early question from like season one or two. I think we're back to it.
I bought a new air fryer because
here we go.
Doing a recipe shooting and my old air fryer was, I didn't use it as much and I went out and I threw out the cash for a bigger one. It's a double oven at the front.
Yeah. Ninja.
Yeah, I bought a Ninja, yeah.
And?
It's the businessman.
Yeah, they're very good.
It gets things so good. I wouldn't cook a chicken around in it, but for like roasted vegetables, I've done a spice bag recipe for a thing.
Go on, give us the spice bag recipe.
So basically, you just dice the potatoes, wash them off really well, put them into your air fryer, and then either buy a spice bag seasoning or make a spice bag seasoning, which is just five spice, Szechuan peppercorn, onion powder, garlic powder,
red chili flakes.
Yeah, yeah, just that stuff. That,
yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, sorry. Yeah.
All the stuff that's in your press.
No, buy one, right?
Or buy it, lads, for God's sake.
Keep an eye on my Instagram. You'll see a recipe coming out in the next few weeks. Mm-hmm. And then hot wok onto the stove, get it really hot, a little bit of sesame oil into the wok, then in with your peppers, in with your onions, and then out of your air fryer that you've had these diced potatoes cooking for 20 minutes, lash them into the wok, turn the wok off, season them up. If you have a brown paper bag,
you not put crispy chicken bits in your
if you want
spice bag.
Yeah, you can. If you like the traditional recipe, I was just giving you the potato recipe with the veg.
Nonsense. Oh, the chicken.
What are you talking about?
And then
that's just a bag.
You know what's perfect with that? Mushy piss.
Oh.
I'm
going to edit all this out.
Do you remember
save your career.
Fish and chips in season one. And
curry sauce.
I like curry sauce when he nearly. I got the same expression there. I'm only messing with the mushy peas. Yeah, if you like mushy peas, I can drive.
Oh, God. The eyes almost
open.
Even if we are fish and chips.
Sinead in Castlebar, you're causing ructions here, but you got a great recipe for a spice bag. Do add the chicken, for the love of God. Thank you all so much for your conundrums. Keep them coming in. food@goloudnow.com.
All right, that's us for another week. Don't forget to check out at Gaza Chef on Instagram at Gar Mullins, dishing it out on the Go Loud pages as well. We get the little clips up there. Hit us up on our socials. We're happy to take unsolicited DMs for content if you want to throw your two cents into it. Anybody you feel we should be chatting on here, always feel free to reach out to myself or Gareth. Thanks very much for listening. I'm Gary O'Hanlon.
And I'm Gar Mullins.
Good luck.
Dishing It Out with Gary O'Hanlon and Gareth Mullins, a Go Loud original podcast.
Subscribe for free on the Go Loud app and never miss an episode.
Go Loud. Sounds better with us.